everybody. It's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience. I am excited to have on the phone today Slim Gamble. He is coming into town. He's going to be at HVAC, the HVAC Pub, which is at 3530 North Clark Street, right there in Wrigleyville, HVACPubWrigley.com, for a show on Thursday, October 10th. And I thought this was interesting to touch base with him because he's coming into town. His day gig, as they say, he is the guitarist for Lady Antebellum, the you know, gigantic country group. But he's got a new recording out called Fake Jazz and Theme Songs, which I want to talk all about. And he's coming in, and he's going to be playing with the Joe Marcenek Band, which I'm hoping I'm saying correctly, there at HVAC on October 10th. So, Slim, thanks so much for jumping on the phone for a second.
Oh, man, thanks for having me on. This is exciting.
So let's talk a little bit now. Obviously, you've played in town with a lot of other bands. Have you been in town kind of leading your own group under these conditions with this type of music?
Just once, and it was a drizzly December day last year at HVAC, actually, same spot. But yeah, I've only done it in Chicago once, so this will be the command performance.
Well, you know, and you're coming into town and you're touring on your new recording, Fake Jazz and Theme Songs. And from what I was looking over everything, this seems to be like your debut recording under your own name. Is that correct?
Yeah, that would be correct.
So what's the deal with the name? Fake Jazz and Theme Songs. I got to ask.
I guess there's two parts to it. Fake Jazz is it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek. It's not meant to be self-deprecating, but it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek like tribute to people who I would consider to be legitimate jazz musicians. Like there are people that dedicate their entire lives to the art form of jazz music, and they transcribe and they learn standards and they play jazz and they listen to jazz records all the time. And I've known a lot of these guys, and it's a commitment, and it's a commitment that I never completely made, because I've played a lot of jazz music. Like I've explored the idiom extensively, but I've also done a whole lot of other stuff. I've always gotten sidetracked, and I've always just gotten into all different kinds of music. So while my record is definitely informed by jazz and it would probably be under the umbrella of jazz, I don't want anyone to think that I'm freaking Wynton Marsalis. You know what I mean? Like it's all over the map. And so it's kind of a tongue in cheek tribute to the people that really know what they're doing in that genre. And the second half, the theme songs, I came up, practicing guitar in front of the TV, and I was born in the 70s. I grew up in the 80s. So it's kind of, to me, that's the golden era of TV show theme music. And, I'm just a big fan of TV show themes from that era. And so I think that informs my writing. And so some of this stuff kind of comes across like soundtrack music. And, so yeah, I put them all together there's the title.
There it is. Well, you know, I mean, looking at your resume and everybody you've played with and all the different things you've done, I mean, and also just kind of like even focusing on the fact that, you know, looking over stuff, you're at the University of Southern California, you were in the studio jazz guitar program, a lot of transcribing from what I read on your bio, which is, you know, normal when you're at a heavy duty jazz program or even a heavy duty music program. So, but to me, you're growing up in the 70s, and, you know, I love talking to somebody who's so accomplished like yourself, who's played so many styles. I tend to think, when we're talking about the jazz thing, but I mean, I tend to think that anybody coming up and growing up in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they're not just exposed to bebop anymore, because that's like the 40s and 50s. That's what you would have listened to, because that was the popular music of the day. So it seems to me like guitarists, musicians coming up in that era, you're exposed to everything. So it makes sense for everything to kind of flow into your original compositions, right?
Yeah. I think that's the case. I mean, any kid that grew up in those decades, really from then until now, like it's such a melting pot of different musical styles that it's hard to not get exposed to a lot of different things. That's a fact.
So when you're coming up, though, I mean, obviously, you know, guitar players, you got to talk about Wes Montgomery. You know, you're coming up that way, so you must have some exposure and some influence on some of those guitar players. I mean, was there certain guitar players like a Wes Montgomery, you know, a Larry Coryell, maybe somebody like that in the jazz genre that you kind of grabbed onto and said, you know, what the heck is that? That's unbelievable. I've got to learn how to do some of that stuff.
Yeah, that would be George Benson for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, obviously Wes. Anyone you name, I've absorbed it. But the guy that really got me going, holy crap, was George Benson. It was actually, when I was probably, 14, 15 years old, I used to ride my bike to the local public library because you could check out records and tapes because we didn't really have CDs quite yet. But right. But I checked out his an LP of Breezin, and I dubbed it to cassette, and that record was one of those things. I'm just like, oh my! Sorry, hold on, my phone's beeping. Geez, sorry.
No, you're fine.
I had to turn that off. But yeah, so I checked that out, and it blew my mind when I was 14, 15 years old. And one of the first jazz tunes that I ever learned to play was Affirmation. His version of that off of the record. And I've recently circled back around to that record, and it still just blows my mind. And you mentioned like trying to play like that. He was definitely one of those guys that I never completely tried to play like, cause I still am kind of going, there's no freaking way, man. It's just too tasty and too clean and too just incredible. So I try to cop his lines. I play a couple of his tunes, actually. We do On Broadway, we do Affirmation, we do Freddie Hubbard's tune Mr. Clean, which a young George Benson played guitar on. But so anyway, he would probably be that guy in jazz that did that for me. Short answer to your question.
No, I'm always curious about it, you know, because I mean, I went to music school, and I know from, you know, some guys are just hardcore. This is what they're playing. This is the way it is, and they get their sound. Now, somebody like you, though, because I mean, you've played in a lot of different genres. Obviously, you're playing with Lady Antebellum now, but you've played on the, you know, Carson Daly show, which means to me that you had a lot of different artists and a lot of different styles coming into the Carson Daly show, where you had to back them up and cop that same style. And it, you know, I find learning jazz and learning some of those things probably helps your technique, probably helps your ear and all of that more than if you were just stuck in one genre and stuck in like learning, you know, okay, all I'm doing is blues or something like that. So it seems to me like you're able to open up and play all these different genres because you have so many different experiences and different kinds of music.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Complete agreement. I mean, it all feeds the machine, I guess. At the end of the end, I mean, the funny thing is until I started working on this project, I hadn't really played a lot of jazz since I moved to Nashville. I did a lot in LA and was kind of on that scene a little bit more. But it had been a while. And when I started getting into it again, I was like, man, like my chops just aren't there. Like I really had to kind of get that back. And as a result, since I've been doing this project for the last couple of years now, I think it's definitely like made me into a better player. I think it makes me a better player with Lady Antebellum and anything else that comes along, because at the end of the day, music is music. And the more you play, just the more dexterity you have, the more musical knowledge you have, and the better your ear is, like you said. So, it all kind of feeds into whatever I happen to be playing.
So let's talk a little bit about the new album, because people are going to be able to check all of this stuff out at HVAC Pub, 7 p.m. are the doors, 8 p.m. show, HVACPubWrigley.com, Thursday, October 10th. I'm getting all the plugs in here. I'm trying to stay focused here. But let's talk a little bit about the new recording. Now, are these all original tunes? Because looking over it, it looks like they're all original tunes on here.
They are. Yeah, man. It's all stuff
I mean, there's a lot of writing involved in this process. So I'm always curious too, when I'm talking to somebody who's composed the music and then is performing on the recording and performing over the tunes, do you have to split like your thinking wise? If you write these tunes, you're pretty close to them at that point. You've written them, you've arranged them, you've put them all together and everything. Now, do you have to kind of separate yourself and say, okay, now I'm playing over these. I've got to get out of the compositional realm and the arranger mode. And now I'm a musician. I'm playing over it. Is that something that you have to consciously think about, or is it natural for you?
I've been playing some of the tunes now for a little while. And so I've managed to get out of the compositional vibe. Like I think once I committed them to recording, I had the arrangements figured out and I had the melodies figured out, and it was a matter of, you know, performing them up to my own expectations of myself, and then, you know, doing the horn sections, just kind of getting everything where I wanted it. But then once I finalized it, At that point, it's like, okay, I know the tunes. Now I can just kind of relax and play.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is. It's a different part of the brain. I tend to consider myself a composer and a writer first. It's kind of what I've always done. Is I've always made stuff up before learning other people's stuff, and so I tend to write the stuff, and then playing becomes sort of secondary. Like I want to get the composition right where I want it, and then when I'm on stage, the composition is it's not even in the back of my mind. It's just not there anymore. At that point, it is all about the performance, and that's something I've done enough of at this point that I just kind of fall into that mode, and it doesn't really take any conscious effort to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I, you know, I'm a drummer, so I mean, you know, I'm not composing anything. I'm just hitting things, and you know, so I don't have to take myself out of that framework, but I've talked to different musicians where it's like, you know, they're constantly thinking about the different harmonics and stuff and why they wrote it this way. And it's like, sometimes they have to just kind of like say, wait a minute, man, I got to play over this now. I can't like think about this stuff. So that's why I love asking people like that about those questions. Now, listening to all these tunes on here, I'm hearing a lot of different styles on here. I mean, there's different grooves on here. I'm hearing some bluesier stuff. I'm hearing some stuff that sounds like it could have been influenced by some 90s fusion things. You know, what was kind of the concept on writing these? A lot of these tunes, have you written like, you know, over a period of years? So maybe some of the styles are changing with the way you're thinking about stuff and the way you're playing at that moment. I mean, what's the process on that?
The process is always different. I mean, there's one tune on there that I basically wrote when I was 19 for a record that I put out with a band a long, long time ago. And that's like the up-tempo, like the modal swing tune, Levitation. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, it all kind of comes from just, it might start with a riff and then I'll hear the melody in my head. Like it all kind of comes back to just things that I'm hearing, more than things that I'm playing. If that makes sense, it kind of, whatever I happen to start playing, then I'll kind of have that sort of stuck in my head. And then over the course of days, like I might be doing something else and I'll be thinking about that guitar part. And I'm thinking what melody could go over that, or if I already have the melody written, you know, what's the underlying harmony. And if that's all done, then like, oh, well, what could the horns be doing in between the guitar phrases? And so it all kind of comes out from just passive, almost like passive meditation, like where I'm just doing something else and I'm thinking about the music, and just sort of, it sort of just springs to mind. It's all over the map, because again, I'm kind of all over the map. Like I don't know that I could sit down and, like a really good film composer or, you know, trailer music composer or music library producer, you say like, okay, I'm going to write something like this today. Oh, I'm going to write something like this, or I'm going to write something, whatever genre they're supposed to be writing. They'll crank something out that sounds like that. I don't know that I can really do that. I just kind of write stuff and it comes out sounding the way it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of why it's all over the place is because each of those tunes over the course of a few months is just something that came out for no particular reason, really. Like there's no connection what I was listening to at the time or what I was in. It's just like, no, I just kind of started doing that day.
You know, I'm also curious when I'm talking to guitar players specifically, and sometimes keyboard players, but sound wise, especially when you're getting kind of the jazz, and you know, I mean, I'm hearing little elements of there's like different sounds. Like one of the tunes on here that you're playing with Jeff Coffin, who's from the Dave Matthews Band, obviously, sounds a little bit Spyro Gyra / Yellow Jackets kind of a feel in there, and then your guitar changes a little bit where I'm hearing a little even Wayne Krantz kind of sounds in there, and kind of like the harder edge stuff. But as a guitarist, I mean, are you sound wise? It's got to be something like when you're playing with Lady Antebellum, you're obviously not playing a lot of these sounds, I would imagine, with them. And then when you're playing on this, I mean, is there a conscious thought process when you're creating the sound that you want and coming out of the guitar for some of these tunes? And do you have to be conscious, depending on the style that you're playing, as far as what your guitar sounds like?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it, I've done enough session work to sort of know what my gear sounds like as far as, okay, I want to get this sound. But even then, when it's my own project like this, I mean, I definitely obsessed over the guitar tones. Like I went back and I mean, there was a couple of those tracks that I went through 8 or 10 guitars and 3 or 4 amps, like just trying to find because it's not just about the right guitar tone. It's about the guitar sitting in the mix in the right place.
Where
different frequencies aren't interfering with each other. And it's challenging in this case because the guitar has to be, it's sort of the singer, you know, it's the lead voice. So it has to pop through, but I also don't want it to be removed from the rest of the ensemble. And so that's where it gets tricky. So like I'll start with, okay, I need the guitar to be this sort of vibe, but then it's like, okay, well that, there's sometimes where it's like, okay, well that didn't work. I thought that would work and it didn't. So mm-hmm. Now I need boring. Some of them, like the tune Cop Show, I cut that in the studio. Like I went direct, just a DI thing into a compressor with some chorus and some delay because I wanted that direct, like Mike Landau 80s guitar thing. And that's how you accomplish that.
Mm-hmm.
Lila Marie, which to go back to the composition thing, I based that on this silly thing I was singing to my 6-month-old daughter at the time. That's her name, Lila. But that was just like, okay, well, this is dirty blues rock. So I mean, it was a Les Paul with some overdrive through a Fender Deluxe, and it's like, well, that's that sound.
Mm-hmm.
So those tunes were easy. A tune like Also Shuffle, I almost drove myself crazy because trying to get a tone that had the melody and the chords that I could do the big chord melody thing on and still have the piano also maintaining its place in the mix. Like it was really challenging because there was just a lot going on there. So that took forever, and it's hit and miss, but the direct answer to your question is like, yeah, I was very, very conscious of that. Just trying to find the right sounds for the tunes. And I think fortunately that's sort of how I've made my living for 15 years now, is finding the right sounds for whatever tunes people are throwing at me. I just had to do it now for my own music.
Yeah. Right. And that might even be the hardest part, right? Cause it's your own music.
that's just it. Like I get a whole lot more critical. Not that I'm not critical of the sounds I'm playing with other people. Believe me, I am. But again, because when I'm making music with other people, there's a singer and I'm there to support the singer and to mm-hmm. support and be part of the ensemble. And in this case, when I take on the role of essentially lead singer only on an instrument, like finding where that sits in is really interesting. Like it really tripped me out. It took me a long time on some of those tunes.
Yeah, right. I didn't really think about it that way, but when you explain it that way, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, it just takes on a whole different role from backing musician.
Yeah. So, all right. So before we jump off here, let's talk a little bit more about the gig coming up. So it's October 10th, Thursday at HVAC, HVAC, Pub, Wrigley.com is the website, 8 p.m. show. And you're playing with Joe Marcenek. I think I'm saying it right. Like I told you before we jumped on, the guy's a killing musician. His band Smokes. It's a really kind of a jam bandish group. They play all around Chicago, but I've never had to pronounce his last name, so I apologize, Joe, in advance if I'm screwing it up. But we talked a little bit before you jumped on, and actually just listening to the album, the new recording, and I can imagine some other tunes that you're going to play, you said that a lot of your shows kind of do start kind of jamming out a little bit, and they start going in different directions than maybe what you think about. So, I mean, I'm assuming that a lot of people that come out are really going to get a full complement of all your different styles, but also probably a lot of improvisation, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, jazz is improvisation. You know, there's mm-hmm. there's head and then you solo. I think that what separates our thing, and the reason, you know, that my buddy Damon, who owns HVAC, like he put this show together with Joe, because I was like, I said, man, let's do a night where we have, you know, a jam band. And then after he plays, we're all going to get up and we're all going to play together and just make some stuff up, because our show does, because I come from jazz, but I'm a pretty heavy classic rock guy. Like that's my first love.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts, you know, we're playing the tunes, but once those solo sections hit, it can go anywhere, and it goes completely off the rails. And we're not sitting in the corner playing Satin Doll. I'll put it that way. it elevates and it escalates and it goes to a whole different place. It's it gets into jam band land. And so I think that fans of jam band music and fans of jazz will really dig what's happening. And the biggest compliment and the biggest review that I get from people is that we do keep them guessing. I think by virtue of the fact that the music is all over the place, like every tune is just like a completely different thing. And I think that in the music industry, there's what I consider a misconception that you have to have sort of a uniform sound to what you're doing that defines you. And I would respectfully disagree with that contention, because I watch people's reactions to, you know, going from like, you know, a total, you know, jam band hippie groove rock thing, and then we bust right into Levitations, which is an up-tempo swing tune, and then we go into you know, Cop Show, and people are just like, wow, that was a left turn. But it keeps them engaged.
Yep.
Like, it never has a chance to get passive. You don't really have a chance to get sidetracked, you know. They don't get lulled into a false security.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, and I mean, I'm with you, and especially with the way the music industry is today. I mean, you know, maybe 50 years ago when you could turn on the radio and there's a pop station, an R&B station, a, you know, classical station, a polka station. Maybe that's when the genres were there. But I, like we talked about when we first started talking about your background, I mean, you know, I think everybody coming up in today's age have been influenced by so many different styles, so many different music, all of that stuff that they love guessing. They don't know what's going to happen next. And that's what the beauty of going to a live show is.
Yeah, that's a fact, man. And I've found, like, I've played some venues that are sort of upscale supper club suburbanite haunts, and these places a lot of time they'll get sort of a smooth jazz thing, and you know, my music, there's some smooth jazz influence, but I would submit that the same people that are into smooth jazz probably came up listening to a Hendrix record or two. Mm-hmm. You know, and I see it every time we play. Like, people are used to a really passive, mellow, groovy thing, and it's, but you know, we rip their faces off and they're like all about it. And I'm kind of like, okay, well, you grew up listening to George Benson and Chuck Mangione, but like, okay, you're also into Zeppelin. Perfect.
That's right. As long as it's grooving and it sounds good, I think everybody's gonna dig anything.
Exactly. Point, yeah.
So, all right, so HVAC Pub, 3530 North Clark Street, 7 p.m. doors, 8 p.m. show, Thursday, October 10th. Slim Gamble and the group. And Slim, thanks so much for jumping on, and hopefully we will have a chance to touch base again as I think you're coming back through Chicago maybe in the spring, so we'll talk when that happens. But everybody's got to get out on October 10th. And that, by the way, anybody listening to this, that is a very cool spot. It's right in Wrigleyville. It's a really great spot to hear a group and hear a group like Slim. So,
some killer gigantic pizzas too, I might add.
Well, that's it. You just sold half the listeners right there. They're going. And of course, if anybody wants to hear more podcasts, more interviews, and more video interviews, ChicagoJazz.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience.